Good afternoon. We'll call the Senate Resources Committee meeting to order this Friday afternoon, March 2nd, 2012. Let the record reflect that it is approximately 3:36 p.m. on March 2nd. We do have the entire committee with us here today. Present to my immediate left is co-chair Senator Wagner, Senator Stedman, Senator Stevens, to my right, Senator McGuire, Senator French, Senator Willikowski, and myself, Senator Pascvan. During this hearing, the committee will present a new committee substitute for Senate Bill 192 relating to oil and gas production tax rate. And my staff, through Mr. Stepp, will present the committee substitute. Mr. Don Bullock and Emily Nauman, part of the legislative legal staff, will be available to answer technical questions about the legislation. The committee will also give the committee members the opportunity to present amendments. And if it is the will of the committee, it is my intent to move the committee substitute to the next committee or referral today. First, Mr. Co-Chair, may I please have a motion to bring the committee substitute for Senate Bill 192 version E before this committee?
I would move CS for Senate Bill 192 resources backslash E.
I would object for purposes of discussion. Mr. Stepp, we have now before us Senate Bill 192 committee substitute version E. Mr. Stepp, welcome. Would you please walk through as best as you can, and again, so all the committee members, if you would like, to, Mr. Bullock and Ms. Nauman are available for the technical questions. And before I get started, I would like to also reflect, we have Senator Giesel in the crowd. We also have Commissioner Butcher, Deputy Commissioner Tangeman, and Chief Economist Stickel. I know online from the Department of Revenue, I have a list here that they are available. Also, if any committee member has any questions, Matt Fonder from the Department of Resources, John Larson, Lenny D. I think they meant revenue here, but anyway, Lenny D., Tim Reihard, Sherry Nienhaus, and Kathy Forrester, also from AOGCC. So we have people that are available for questions. Given that introduction, Mr. Stepp, please begin your presentation.
Co-Chairman Pascvan, Co-Chairman Wagner, members of the committee, thanks for the opportunity to present to the Senate Resources Committee the committee substitute for Senate Bill 192. Version E. In addition to retaining the progressivity rates and the progressivity cap advanced in the CS for SB 192 version B, the CS before you version E, which is dated March 1st, 2012, contains four significant additions to Alaska's oil and gas production tax statutes to include the following. First, it rewards increased production. This concept was advanced to the committee via Amendment B-9. Second, the CS in front of you establishes a gross minimum tax. It creates an oil information system. And it also separates oil and natural gas for purposes of calculating the progressivity portion of the production tax. First, let me run through progressivity, if I may, Mr. Chairman. The committee substitute version E lowers both the rate of progressivity and the cap on progressivity. The committee substitute retains the original trigger of $30 in production tax value, at which point the progressive tax rate is calculated at 0.35% per dollar increase in PTV up to 50% PTV, or approximately $101.43. This is a reduction from the current progressivity rate of 0.4 to the 0.35. At 50% PTV, the CS adds a second trigger on the progressive tax rate calculation that lowers the progressive tax rate to 0.1% on PTV up to 60%, or approximately $201.43. The committee substitute in front of you adds a statutory maximum tax rate of 60% under the production tax statutes. This is a reduction in the maximum tax rate from 75% as it is currently in ACES to 60%. Initial calculations from the Department of Revenue indicate that this reduction in progressivity will result in decreased tax revenue to the state of Alaska of approximately $200 to $250 million per year. which also means, of course, it's a reduction in production taxes paid by the oil industry of approximately $200 to $250 million per year. There will be additional modeling on those numbers as the bill moves its way through the legislature. We don't have a fiscal note yet, and like I said, those are the initial estimates. The goal here is to return the upside potential to industry at high oil prices. From the state's perspective, lowering the progressivity rate from 0.4 to 0.35 and reducing the cap from 75% to 60%, this legislation is a significant step forward. Moving on to the next component of the committee substitute, rewarding increased production, which was advanced last week as Amendment B9. Per legislative legal's advice, there's been one change to Amendment B9 that is reflected in the CS for SB 192 version E, and Mr. Bullock can get into this in more detail for you. The change will ensure that the allowance for incremental oil is not applied to the production tax value calculation for progressivity. The purpose of this amendment is to reward companies that increase their North Slope production levels from 1 year to the next, helping to increase the flow through TAPS. Companies which achieve this goal will earn an allowance on the oil they produce above the prior year. For simplicity, we'll refer to this as their new oil. The allowance reduces their PTV by $10 for the new barrels of oil produced. This allowance should not be confused with a tax credit or a lowering of tax rates. It's a reduction in the PTV used to calculate production tax. So if a company produced, for example, 100,000 barrels in 2012 and increased that to 100,000 barrels in 2013, that company would be eligible for an allowance on the new 10,000 barrels. The allowance would reduce their PTV by $10 multiplied by the number of barrels of new oil produced. Again, this allowance wouldn't influence the tax rate itself. It would not count as a lease expenditure and isn't part of the calculation that determines average profits per barrel. To accomplish this, DOR, the Department of Revenue, would determine the average daily statewide production for each producer for the previous tax year. This figure would be adjusted by eliminating any day or days in which there was a significant slowdown in North Slope production or transportation. This is the adjusted average. This calculation would also exclude any new oil that can be attributed to acquisitions or mergers. So, for example, Mr. Chairman, if ConocoPhillips bought Pioneer, it would not get a new oil allowance for the existing production at Ugric unless it increased production levels above those achieved by Pioneer. That, Mr. Chairman, is a brief summary of rewarding increased production. Next component of the CS was presented as Amendment B13, and it is establishing a gross minimum tax. This amendment would establish a production tax floor of 10% of the gross value of oil at the point of production for legacy fields in Alaska. The floor would apply only to fields which have already produced 1 billion barrels of oil and are still producing 100,000 barrels a day on average. Prudhoe and Kuparik are the only fields that currently meet this definition. The vast majority of Alaska's oil production comes from these fields, and most facilities associated with them were fully depreciated long ago. The amendment does not apply to new fields or smaller fields in order to avoid any potential that it could put new field development or development of smaller reservoirs at risk. ACES currently has a production tax floor. It is between 0 and 4%, depending on the price of oil, and can be brought even lower by credits. This means the state could actually owe companies production tax in a low-price environment when the state has a cash flow deficit and is struggling to pay for the most essential state services. The inclusion of this provision in the legislation addresses that potential. This provision is intended to alleviate concerns that the current floor does not adequately protect the state when oil prices are low. In fact, at prices as low as $70, the state may take in more with a 10% gross floor than it would with ACES. The industry has said ACES does not work for them in an extremely high price environment. Conversely, it does not work for the state and is not durable in a low price environment. The new floor will ensure that Alaskans get some production tax for their oil, even when prices are below $50 per barrel. We shouldn't be lulled into thinking that oil prices will remain above $100 forever, when history shows us that oil prices are extremely volatile. Just 3 years ago this month, oil was selling for $47 per barrel. As consultants have told us, ACES needs to be durable in a wide range of price environments. This provision helps achieve that goal and protects the state at the downside. That's a summary of the gross minimum. Moving on to oil information systems. This was presented to the committee last week as Amendment B-16 and has been incorporated into the CS. Concerns have been raised about oil and gas information that is not available to legislative policymakers and the public. While much of the information is confidential under law, there's a considerable amount that is public, but is scattered among several agencies and can at times be difficult to find. This provision in law will begin the process of making information more available to the policymakers, public, and oil and gas companies who may be seeking to do business in Alaska's oil fields. Under this provision in the committee substitute, it will require the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission to develop an electronic petroleum information management system that will contain public information currently gathered by the commission, as well as the Departments of Revenue, Natural Resources, and Labor and Workforce Development. The system will consolidate available public oil and gas information that is currently scattered among the several agencies for the purpose of the system improving the administration of the oil and gas production tax and to facilitate exploration, development, and production of oil and gas resources. While information going into the system is limited as to what is available and not confidential, the legislation contains the information being sought. As more information becomes publicly available through statutory or other changes, it can then be incorporated into the information system. The information list that is in the committee substitute is taken from a 2007 Gaffney-Klein report that provided an overview of how the acquisition, distribution, and publication of oil company data is handled in other oil and gas producing regimes. The legislation directs the departments that have control over the various aspects of the information to provide what is not confidential to the commission in a form suitable for distribution. The legislation directs AOGCC, the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, to develop and implement the system. That, Mr. Chairman, is a summary of the information system. Moving to the final provision of the new committee substitute that's before you is what's become commonly known as decoupling. Mr. Chairman, in the joint Senate Resources and Finance Committee hearings on Monday, February 13th and Tuesday, February 14th of this year, 2012, consultant Pedro Van Meurs warned the committee of deficiencies in the current ACES system. Dr. Van Meurs warned that, quote, the BOE, barrel of equivalent, concept results in a situation where new gas production could lead to massive losses of oil-based revenues, unquote. In remarks to this committee, Dr. Van Meurs identified this deficiency as, quote, the nonsensical cross-subsidization of gas, unquote. During his presentation, Dr. Van Meurs also warned the Joint Committees, Resources and Finance, that, quote, the BOE concept would result in massive government revenue losses on oil production if incrementally also gas would be developed. This does not make any sense, Van Meurs said. It is clear that Alaska would not accept such unnecessary losses. This, in turn, impedes gas project development, unquote. In his conclusions, Dr. Van Meurs stated, quote, it is therefore essential that in any revision of ACES, this problem is also dealt with in advance. This would permit to add gas terms to the package later or immediately without having to change oil terms again, unquote. And when I give those quotations, Mr. Chairman, those are written quotations. They're in the slideshow. I didn't go back and listen to the audio transcript. Those are in the written slides that were advanced to the committee, just to be clear. This legislation that's now before you separates oil and natural gas for purposes of calculating the progressivity portion of the production tax. Under this bill, the progressivity surcharges for oil and Cook Inlet and in-state gas would be calculated together but distinctly from export gas instead of the current practice on all oil and gas combined. The progressivity structure itself would be changed to conform with the rates set forth in this legislation. Under current law, the tax rate is based on the combined British Thermal Unit, or BTU, value of oil and gas. However, oil and gas can and does have vastly different values on a BTU basis. Currently, a BTU of oil is, as you all know, worth much more than a BTU of gas. Accordingly, once a major gas sale starts, overlaying the existing oil production, the BTU value of the combined oil and gas would be much lower than it was for oil alone. This has been referred to as the dilution effect and could cause a significant reduction in oil taxes as a result of a major gas sale. The existing tax structure, in conjunction with the inherent uncertainty of future oil and gas prices, exposes the state of Alaska to significant financial risk were a major gas sale to occur. The structure also creates economic instability for entities looking to participate in the development and financing of a natural gas pipeline project in Alaska. The legislation now before you removes the dilution effect by having progressivity calculated distinctly for oil and gas. This will result in no reduction in oil taxes from a major gas sale. As in current law, the bill gives the Department of Revenue the authority to adopt regulations to allocate costs between oil and gas, with the added instruction that a method based on relative BTU barrel of oil equivalents should be considered. Mr. Chairman, this bill has an effective date of January 1st, 2013. That includes my overview of the legislation. Mr. Bullock is here to answer more specific questions.
Any questions for the presenter or Mr. Bullock or Ms. Nauman? Senator French.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Stepp, maybe just remind me and the public where the decoupling provision came from. Is it a decoupling provision we're familiar with, or is it something new?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Or through the chair. Thank you, Senator French. The direction to Mr. Bullock to draft this part of the committee substitute, he was asked to incorporate the House committee substitute for the committee substitute for Senate Bill 305 from the Finance Committee from the 26th Alaska State Legislature. So it was the bill that passed the Senate in 2010, 11. It was the bill that passed in the 26th Legislature.
10. Everybody's a little bit tired.
Yes.
Yeah.
2010.
Very good. That was with an assist from the Revenue Commissioner, and I thank him for that.
Thank you.
Any further questions of Mr. Stepp or Mr. Bullock or Ms. Nauman, who drafted the bills? Seeing none, I withdraw my objection. Any further objections to committee substitute version / E?
I object.
Senator.
Speak to my objection. If I may, please.
Yes.
You know, this is the close of our hearings on Senate Bill 192. February 24th, the Senate Bipartisan Working Group issued a statement saying that we want three things: increased oil production, and these are three things out of this bill. Increased oil production, more jobs for Alaskans, sustainable state revenue over the long term. I don't think this bill does any of the above. After studying the newest CS final version / E, which was sent out at 10:23 last night, we now find we have decoupling language. I'm going to what Senator French just mentioned. None of us in this committee knew, or I don't think anyway, I as co-chairman knew nothing about putting the decoupling language into this bill. We had no public testimony. We had no hearings. This resource committee had no discussion of it. But now we have a decoupling inclusion that's not been before the committee in the last 2 years. The bill started out as 2 pages, now 21 pages long. Over half the bill's decoupling issue, which has never been before the committee, as I stated earlier. We have publicly patted ourselves on the back that an open, transparent process is taking place in the development of this bill. And that has not taken place. Some amendments which were conceptually presented a scant week ago are included and others are not. And that's part of the process. I understand that. But that's not an open and transparent process. Senate Bill 192 was read across on February 8th. And if you look on basis, it will show that the bill has been heard in committee 21 times, including today. Of that 21 times, only one time has there been any meaningful dialogue among the committee, and that's today. That's what we have the opportunity to do now. The dialogue on the bill grew overnight from 2 pages to 21 pages. I had planned to offer an amendment dealing with a tax holiday, I received that amendment today at 1 p.m. That amendment that was received at 1 p.m., according to the log of Ledge Affairs, was completed by legal, Ledge Legal, at 10:56 p.m. on March 1st. Let me talk about public testimony, and I include the industry in that description. The bill was read across February 8th. 20 days later, on February 28th, the Senate Resources Committee finally heard from the public on a very small portion of the CS before us. Finally this week, we had public input. And the result of that input, there were 15 not sure by my count, 45 yeas and 96 nays to the bill in front of us. Excuse me, to the previous bill in front of us, not this CS. Clearly, people who testified were overwhelmingly opposed to the CS offered to them for testimony. I have no idea how they would testify on this new CS. We haven't asked them. It's clear that some of the amendments offered and included should have received modeling before it moved from this committee. Mr. Chairman, I go on and on, but enough public time has been taken up on this bill. And with that, I will maintain an objection to this bill passing out of committee.
Brief at ease. Back on the record, Madam Clerk, please call the roll on the adoption of the CS to 192 version / E.
Senator Stedman?
Yes.
Senator Stevens?
Yes.
Senator Wilkowski?
Yes.
Senator French?
Yes.
Senator McGuire?
No.
Senator Wagner?
No.
Senator Costa?
Yes. The committee substitute for 192 version /E is before the Senate Resources Committee. At this time, are there any amendments that would like to be presented to this bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know this is going to pass, so I'm getting excited. I move amendment number one, which is now. It was old B4. It is now E16.
16.
I move E16 as amendment number.
I would object for purposes of discussion and.
And Mr. Chairman, I will be brief. We've had discussion. This is one of the areas I think we've had substantial discussion, and I appreciate the indulgence of both committee co-chairmen to have offered this amendment in prior hearings and to have discussed it. So I won't go into the details of what the amendment does other than to remind the public and members that this is bracketed progressivity. And this is the amendment that I offered that adds the additional top brackets, making progressivity slightly more, I would say, favorable to the state. Increasing the state's take at the two higher levels. So it adds the additional two brackets when you get to $105.50 through $117.50, and then the final bracket is $117.50 and up. So I'll just, with your indulgence, explain the philosophical underpinnings from which I offer this. And I have listened thoroughly to the consultants and feel they reconfirmed much of what I believe. They showed us that in their slides that particularly when you're looking at high-cost development economics, which is largely what you're dealing with in Alaska, that the CS that's in front of us doesn't actually move the needle far enough. It doesn't change the economics of those high-cost opportunities. And I want to start by highlighting that point because it was our own consultants who I trust who showed that at the $70 range, that what you can see is that our bill here, the Senate bill, the CS Senate Bill 192, just runs right along the lines of ACEs in that curve. And so you see no significant change until you get up to about 140. And so what we're missing, in my opinion, as I move this amendment B4, which is now E16, is this blue line along here, is we're missing opportunities for Alaskans to develop and jobs. What we know, if economics play out the way they should, invisible hand theory, more fields will be developed at that lower rate. And so that's what I'm trying to get to. I want to also say thank you to my colleagues. I think it's been an unorthodox approach. And while there has been some criticism, I think it has also, on the other hand, encouraged a free flow of ideas. And I greatly appreciate that. I think there's no doubt from people who've been listening that we have deep philosophical divides in this committee, but they're reasoned. And I appreciate that. I believe that when I voted for ACES, and I did vote for ACES, that I made an error in voting for, or wish I would have, it was contained in one package, wish I would have understood better the effects of the progressivity that we put in the final hours of that debate. I feel very comfortable with the base rate, and I feel that the debate on 20% and 22.5% versus 25% was thoroughly vetted, and feel confident in my decision. I think for me personally, and I can only speak for myself, that I did not understand just how high of a government take progressivity would mean at those higher oil prices. I did predict and went along with the assumptions that we would end up in a high oil price environment. In fact, we have ended up in that high oil price environment. So I think from that standpoint, the legislature got in good information. I just wish we would have looked at, better at that progressivity factor. So E16 is designed to reduce that progressivity factor into an area through bracketing, much like your individual return to IRS, to the IRS, that will incentivize the industry by equaling out that share that we take as a government and the share that the industry is entitled to as profits for their risk that they're taking. I want to say that I look at one indicator, and I understand that this committee has had a lot of discussion about the decline in production and what they think they can attribute that to, and I think they're a fair reasoned discussions about it not necessarily being this tax code. Some people even believe that the reservoirs themselves weren't performing. But I would like to cite in particular to the spring 2007 forecast, which was the very last forecast that was produced for us as lawmakers before we voted on ACES. And in that spring forecast, which we do rely on these forecasts, the Department of Revenue projected that in 2012, Alaska would be producing 807 barrels of oil a day. That would be the throughput in the Trans-Alaska pipeline. And according to the Department of Revenue today, the current average for 2012 is just 584,000 barrels a day. That difference is 223,000 barrels a day of production. And I don't believe anyone who was here at that time and voted for ACES would have believed or thought that that tax system would have reduced production, and I don't believe that anyone here today supports the decline in production. I personally think this amendment is key in order is key to bringing back the investment. The numbers that were prepared by Frank Molly, who is the forecaster that Judge Gleason concurred with. We spent a couple of days in this committee listening to some testimony, both critical of and supportive of the Gleason opinion, but I think throughout, Frank Molly's data was relied on. And so it is his forecasting, in fact, that I'm citing here today. So I do subscribe to the old adage that you can't tax your way to prosperity. I don't know all of the reasons that we are in a decline. I do think that it's fair to point out that it's an aging field and that there might be some failure of the reservoir to perform, but I also believe that we can offer tax reductions to incentivize development that will lead to production. And I do point to Cook Inlet as an example. This committee sat here 2 years ago and began the debate, and then last year passed 309. Senate Bill 309 has led to a renaissance in Cook Inlet. And while we have not seen as much government take as a result of shifting those numbers in Cook Inlet, what we have seen is an injection of capital into the private sector. And I think philosophically that's what I'd like to emphasize, is that as we move forward as Alaskans and we look at how much our economy is dependent on oil and gas, we have to remember that circulating dollars into the private sector will be key to our recovery in the future. So the car dealerships that have testified before us have improved business rates by 40%, contrasted with Dead Horse, which is now in a decline for their car dealerships. Those are jobs that Alaskans hold. Those are Alaskan businesses that pay taxes and Alaskan businesses that employ Alaskans. So I do think we need to look at that. Further, I want to argue that I think this progressivity reduction contained in E16 does something else that Pedro Banmeres talked about as one of the inefficiencies contained in our tax system right now. And I will point out that he did say that ACES was an inefficient system. He talked about gold plating, and he talked about the fact that when you get into those high marginal tax rates, the areas that I cited right around 140 a barrel, that it leads to irrational behavior. If companies perform the way you think they will, they are going to be spending more money in an effort to try to reduce their overall tax rate, and that can lead to what we refer to as gold plating. So I also offer this amendment in hopes that we can get some of the efficiencies built back into our system. The industry has committed in public forums throughout the state, before business leaders, and here in this room, to investing at least $5 billion in new investment on the North Slope. And I do recognize members' concerns about this commitment. I don't take them lightly. I think that there's been tremendous good public pressure on the part of policymakers here representing their communities to get the industry to put it in writing, to make it more forceful. And with the limitations that they have in their unit sharing agreement and other things, they have indicated to us that they've made as strong of a statement as they can. But, Mr. Chairman, I'm prepared to trust them. I am. I've listened to them make these statements in public forums, and I've listened to them make them here. I've listened to them make them in my office. And I trust that, like all of Alaska, they want to see these fields succeed. They want to see these projects come online. They want to be able to walk into the boardrooms in Houston and argue that the system here in Alaska is more competitive, and as a result, that more capital should be invested here for a return on their profit. And as I wrap up this amendment, I am reminded of something as I was explaining to my staff that I learned years ago when I was first learning how to fly an airplane in flight school. And I use this example for other things in my life, but this one really, I think, applies here. The first time that my flight instructor said that I had to go into a controlled stall and spin, I was terrified. And every instinct in my body said, I don't want to do this, first of all. And second of all, when he explained to me that despite your urge to pull up, that the very thing that you have to do is point your nose down in order to regain control of your aircraft and to recover and build your speed, your airspeed again. And for anyone here who's done that and experienced that, you know exactly what I mean. You have to fight every instinct in your body. I think to a certain extent we're on a parallel track here in the legislature. We have seen our production numbers decline. We know what that means in the future, and particularly when we multiply it out at a lower cost per barrel, which could happen. We look at our budgets, we look at the schools, the roads, all of the valuable state services that we provide, and we worry about our state. And I think the instinct for many of us has been to grab as much as we can. As our own consultant said, when you look at this tax system, there's no other way to describe it but a harvest mode. It's a harvest model. And these are consultants that have looked at tax systems all over the world. And that's the way they describe Alaska's tax system, as a harvest model. And I understand that. I understand that we are putting faith in the industry as partners to say, let's go here together. Let's pull up. Let's reduce these taxes. Let's incite more investment and let's bring Alaska back to a competitive, accelerated economy. And so it's in that spirit I offer E16 and urge member support.
Any committee discussion or questions of Bill Senator Wilkowski?
Yeah, just on discussion, Mr. Chair. I certainly agree with Senator McGuire. We have deep philosophical differences on these issues. I oppose this amendment for a number of reasons. It will cost the state billions of dollars per year, this amendment. We're the board of directors of the state of Alaska. The Constitution says we're responsible for ensuring we get maximum benefit for a resource, ensuring that we develop the properties and get the maximum benefit that we can get. Now, we've had 30 years of low taxation policy in this state. We had a system called the ELF, the economic limit factor. Under that system, we had a 0% tax rate by 2006 on 15 out of 19 fields on the North Slope. The legacy fields paid a tax rate of around 12.5% gross tax. Now, the philosophy for 30 years was low taxes will lead to more production. Well, what happened to production during the 30 years of this low taxation policy we had? We went from 2 million barrels a day to 750,000 barrels a day. This was a failed policy. The policy simply didn't get us the results that we want. So I strongly disagree with going back to a policy that we've had in place for 30 years and failed and cost the state probably hundreds of billions of dollars. I can't support going back to that policy, Mr. Chairman. You look from 2001 to 2006, we had ELF in place. We had zero tax rate by 2006 on 15 out of 19 fields. And what happened to production? We were going down 8% per year, roughly. We had jobs decline, we had investment decline, we had production decline. Now, let's look where we are since we've passed ACES. We have all-time highs in jobs. We've never had more people working on the North Slope than we do today. We have hot sheeting going on in the North Slope right now. Hot sheeting, for those who don't know, they don't have enough beds on the North Slope to accommodate all the employees that work up there. They have people, they pay people $120, $125 per day so that someone else can sleep in their bed while they're out working. This is how many people we've got working on the North Slope today. Unfortunately, a high percentage of them are non-Alaskans, non-residents. We've got investment at all-time high. Operating investment has never been higher on the North Slope than it is today. And this isn't just operating investment like we've heard. This is capital investment. Both are at all-time highs. Never been higher than. Every single year since we've passed ACES, we've had all-time highs in investment. People say, well, oh, everyone's leaving Alaska. Everyone's going to North Dakota. Well, if you look at the number of companies on the North Slope, Mr. Chairman, we've increased the number of companies by 250% since we passed ACES. We will have more exploratory wells scheduled this year than we've had in decades on the North Slope. Now, I hear companies are doing terrible. Companies are doing they can't make money on the North Slope anymore. Let's look at the company's income statements. We've had $30 billion in profits on the North Slope in the 4 years since ACES has been passed, 4.5 years. I think that's great. I'm happy that the oil companies are making record profits in the state of Alaska. I'm thrilled at that. But as someone who's responsible for ensuring that Alaska gets our fair share, our maximum benefit, we have a responsibility to ensure that we do that as well. I'd say $30 billion, I'm thrilled for that. I can't see giving them billions more back. I can't see it, Mr. Chairman. Let's look at internal rates of return. People say Alaska is not a good place to do business. When we did modeling last time under ACES, the modeling doesn't change. The modeling is the modeling. When we did the modeling under ACES to figure out internal rates of return, we assume that capital costs were going to go up 300%. They haven't gone up 300%. The internal rates of return, if you put your money in the bank, Mr. Chairman, you're lucky if you get 1% today. According to Gaffney and Klein, the company that was hired, I don't know if they're still working for the governor or not. We haven't seen them in a long time. According to Gaffney and Klein, the internal rate of return for infill drilling at Prudhoe Bay, 123% at $80 barrel oil. That's great. I'm happy they're making those high rates of return. But don't come back to Alaska and tell me that Alaska is not profitable and you can't make money in Alaska when all the numbers, all the objective evidence says just the opposite. Let's look at the 2004 BP memo that we saw. I'd never seen this before. This was shocking. An actual memo from BP saying Alaska's role in the company is to be a cash cow. Alaska's role in the company is so that they can make a lot of money here and spend it to grow their business elsewhere. That's what they've said. That's in their memo. Let's talk about the $5 billion in commitments that we keep hearing. We just heard yesterday, this is no commitment. There's no commitment. They don't have the agreement of all the parties for this $5 billion. So there's no commitment. So essentially, and let's break that down. The $5 billion commitment, pledge, whatever you want to call it, some of the projects have been in their plans of development for 5 years, we learned. I asked the director of oil and gas for the Parnell administration, can you name me a single project plan development on the North Slope that's uneconomic under ACES? He couldn't name me a single one. We don't know. I haven't seen modeling. I've been asking for this for over a year, Mr. Chairman. I haven't seen a single model, a single field, a single development, a single project, exploration, anything. I haven't seen modeling of anything that's shown me that there is a single economic, uneconomic project under ACES that would be made economic by HB 110 or a similar type of bill. So I haven't seen any data that shows it, Mr. Chairman. I can't vote for a bill that gives back that amount of money when I haven't seen modeling that does it. Now, the $5 billion investment over 10 years, it's really could be 6 to 10 years. So $5 billion over 10 years, well, that's $500 million a year. But here's the catch. The state picks up 60% of the costs. So what we're getting is a $200 million investment. So, and in that time, we're giving back roughly $18 billion, roughly $2 billion per year, and we're getting $200 million in investment. Is there a CEO in the world? Is there a businessman in the world, a businesswoman in the world that would accept that deal? I give you $2 billion, you give me back $200 million. They'd get fired. There's not a CEO in the world that would take that. So I can't support an amendment that goes I can't support this amendment, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Senator Wagner.
I just want to add a little bit here, a little bit of correction. We keep hearing about the explorers, and I admit it's nice to have explorers on the North Slope. I happened to do the legislation some 10 years ago in Senate Bill 186 that brought a lot of those explorers to the slope. Anyway, it gave them a lot of credits. And at the same time, I thought, and I was unaware of what was really going on, it isn't the ability to drill and produce oil. There isn't one well that's being drilled this year or was drilled last year that's put one drop of oil into the pipeline. We have zero increase in production in areas outside of the existing units. And we aren't going to get any production out of those wells. They're drilling wells. If they find hydrocarbons, they're trying to flip them and sell them to somebody else and not produce them. We made a mistake there. I'm ready to admit we made a mistake. And the mistake was not requiring people to come to production. That's what this is all supposed to be, is production, increased in production to maintain the revenues to the state of Alaska. Wow, that's hard to compete with.
Coming to your rescue.
But that's the true story about what's going on the slope right now and the amount of work we have in exploration. It's basically to hold on to leases. It's do their commitment on their lease to do the drilling and to explore on that lease. It's not about production. So we need to keep that in mind when we deliberate on this bill or any other bill dealing with taxes.
Any further discussions?
I just want to wrap up. So whenever.
Senator,
we're making headway. Just a couple comments, Mr. Chairman, because I think the amendments offered in, with good intention, but I'm going to oppose the amendment. Not that we don't have to, for two reasons. Mainly because I think it moves too much cash in the system without further balancing the system out. But we have a progressivity adjustment within the CS, and some of us can argue that we may have to go back and adjust it some more, tweak it, and continue to work on it. But I think we need to be a little bit careful we don't move too much cash too fast and get the system further out of balance. We could tip it to the other direction that we are today. In other words, we've got, I think, too heavy of a bite at high oil prices, particularly on some of the slides when we saw oil at $150 or $200. There wasn't much heading to the industry side and the vast majority of that to the state side. And I think we've all recognized that at this committee that we've got to struggle and get that balance. But I think this particular amendment, it's just not ripe and in time to be placed in the bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator. Follow up.
Thank you. Yep, fair enough. And I appreciate the comments from my colleagues. I want to point out one thing I had in my notes, Frank Molly. I meant to say Dudley Platt with respect to the economist. My apologies for that. And I also want to make it clear on the record that this has the two higher brackets. I think I did, but just to recognize that it's distinct from the governor's bill that way. And then also just a couple points. One, that this amendment wouldn't take us back to ELF, which was the system that my colleague to my left was referring to. It still ensures a higher state take than any other tax regime we've had in the history of Alaska. That's a fact, even with this amendment. I also just want to point out that I appreciate what Senator Stedman just said, that there is more work to be done, and I do recognize that. I offer this amendment because if I could wave my wand right now, I'd like to start here and have that discussion. The committee chairman has decided to start somewhere else, but this is my place to offer it. But I appreciate his remarks. Also, just that it's true that there are a lot of workers up on the slope, but as was indicated by the co-chairman, evidence that we've received is that those workers are up there in exploratory wells and in maintenance operations, and what we want is people up there working on production. So I offer that those remarks in wrap-up.
Thank you. I will maintain my objection to the adoption of the amendment. Madam Secretary, please call the roll call vote.
Senator Rokowski?
No.
Senator French?
No.
Senator Stevens?
No.
Senator McGuire?
Yes.
Senator Stedman?
No.
Senator Pastan?
No.
Senator Wagner?
Yes.
Two yeas and five nays.
Senator McGuire?
By a narrow margin. I think it went down in flames. Okay, I am going to move amendment E-17, which was in our packets here, was the old B-7. So I move amendment E-17.
I would object for purposes of discussion. Senator, please explain.
Thank you, and I'll be briefer on this.
I need a brief at ease while I get that amendment in front of me.
Brief at ease. On record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is essentially B5 because it doesn't have the two higher brackets, but it's essentially progressivity bracketed, applying only to new fields, in a nutshell. Existing production is expected to decline at between 7% and 11% annually. I just want to put these facts into the record as I introduce this amendment, to just 336,000 barrels a day by fiscal year 2017. According to the fall 2012 revenue forecast, Alaska would then need to bring on 200,000 barrels a day of new production by 2017 just to maintain our current production. Something the co-chairman says often, that he's not sure if we can attain a million barrels a year of flow rate within a decade. He'd just like to get us on a path to maintain what we have. So I just give that alarming rate for us to think about it as we tweak and look at the system of incentives, that it would take 200,000 new barrels just to keep current with what we have. So I think E-17 attacks this problem from a slightly different angle. It doesn't affect any current production. And so the senator two over to my left talks about the notion of a give back to corporations. I see it as a modification or a correction to something that we overreached on, but it, fair enough, he sees it as a give back. This amendment would do nothing in that regard. It affects future production. So it does three things. It reduces the base tax rate to 15% for new fields outside existing units for 7 years. It adopts a bracketed progressivity system similar to what we saw in Amendment B5 with a top bracket of 25%. And as I said earlier, these provisions apply to the first 7 years of sustained production, and then those fields would revert to regular ACES regime under this amendment. If this subject comes up again in finance, I hope it does, there, whether it's this model or another of correcting the overreach in progressivity, we've discussed how many years you might want to do it if it were going to apply to future development as an incentive. And we've heard 1 year in an amendment. We've heard 7 years. Some have argued for more years, like 10. So I've heard from new explorers in particular, and during this amendment, I want to take time to talk about them. They have explained to me in my office, and I think they've explained to many of you in your office, just how important changes to ACES for future development is to them. I know of at least one company that has secured a contract for development that would lead to 1,400 new Alaskan jobs that is specifically contingent on the passage of ACES for future development. So I'm worried for the future, and I expressed that in my former amendment, but at least if we're not going to do it for existing fields, let's do it for the future. Let's show new explorers just how important it is to us to get it right and to maintain a competitive environment here in Alaska. Let's bring in new players and grow our production. Let's get more oil into the Trans-Alaska pipeline. And in this, I want to talk just briefly about my experience in Alberta, and it does shape a lot of how I feel. I was the president of a group called the Pacific Northwest Economic Region during the exact period of time when Alberta adopted a windfall profits tax. Slightly different than what we have here before us. But the net effect was that industry said this tax is too high. And Pedro Van Mieris referred to it this way. He said, the experience of Alberta, which faces a declining conventional oil production like we do, indicates that designing lower fiscal terms in the 50 to 60% range of government take for higher cost resources is a viable strategy to increase production. And so in my experience and watching Alberta go through what they did, once they ratcheted back their tax regime, they got back the business that they had lost largely to places like Saskatchewan, which had taken advantage of the opportunity in front of them and had incentivized their oil industry. After Alberta announced an increase in its royalties in October of 07, as I said, their investment declined, as recorded by their government, by 50%. That was in the system in 2007. They came back after a competitiveness review, which you've heard me talk about here in this committee, and modified their system in the years 2009 to 2010. Their changes resulted in a rebound in investment from $10.6 billion in 2008 to $16 billion by 2011, and record land sales that surpassed previous records by over $400 million. Pedro appropriately used Alberta as a model, and he went on to say, and I'd like to just highlight this one part. We all pull out Pedro quotes, but this is with respect to new light oil. He said, the 60 to 65% government take for more costly new light oil resources, as proposed in House Bill 110 and House Bill 17, is a reasonable level from an international perspective. Amendment E-17 adopts this level of government take for new undeveloped fields outside of existing units. To be fair, Pedro did say that this approach, bracketed progressivity, was a complicated approach and one in which we wouldn't know the full effects. He recommended other approaches which have been contained in amendments here, and perhaps we will discuss further up in the Senate Finance Committee. But since I have not seen those amendments fully modeled at this point, and don't know what their impact would be, and have not heard commiserate commitments from industry, I'm going to rely on E-17 for now. And so it's with that that I offer this amendment, hoping to encourage new investment, new players, and more production in the Trans-Alaska pipeline.
Senator French.
Thank you. A question is for Senator McGuire. Page one of the amendment, first the date. 2008, why that date and not a different one?
Because we were trying to get, let's see here, so to whatever from a lease or property containing land or something. Fish, do you want to address it? I think.
Senator French, through the chair, for the record, my name is Michael Pawlowski, and I'm aide to Senator McGuire. We received this amendment fairly late from drafting. The point of the 2008 number is not within a unit that has been in commercial production as of December 31st, 2008. That was the bright line that was drawn about what was an existing unit or is an existing unit, to distinguish between what the amendment's attempting to do, which is only affect projects that are outside of the existing unit. So it was really just a line drawn in the sand about that date. There's nothing special about it, to my knowledge.
Just a follow-up question. And so would the amendment in general apply to Prudhoe-Kuparuk Alpine?
Senator French, through the chair, absolutely not.
Okay. Thank you. I'll just say I'm going to be a no vote, but this amendment comes closer to getting my vote than the previous one did. This is what we need to be focusing on, but I'm concerned that by leaving out Prudhoe, you're leaving out the place where you can move a lot of oil. We all know that's still one of the biggest reservoirs left in North America, and a 1 or 2% production increase in Prudhoe Bay will swamp a lot of smaller new fields. And so, but I like the idea because, in my view, we have to be focused on incentivizing new oil, whether it comes from Prudhoe, whether it comes from heavy oil, whether it comes from Alpine, whether it comes from anywhere. And so, I appreciate the spirit in which it's offered, but there is a mechanism in the bill that does that. Whether it's the right mechanism or not, I think we still have to find out. And I'll reserve my remarks about that topic for later. But I just wanted to ask a question and thank you.
Thank you, Senator
French. Senator Stedman has a...
I just get some of the unfortunate duties here tonight. I'm going to oppose this amendment. It's on point in that we have to work on this incremental production, but the concern that's been expressed is the complexity of our current system, and we need to be careful they don't make it too complex, but we still have to solve the problem that Senator McGuire's targeting here in this amendment. I'll oppose this amendment here tonight, Mr. Chairman, but it doesn't mean that the issue goes away. The issue's in the middle of the table.
Well said. Any further committee discussion, comment? I maintain my objection. Madam Secretary, please call a roll call vote.
Senator Stevens?
No.
Senator Stedman?
No.
Senator Wilkowski?
No.
Senator French?
No.
Yes.
Senator Wagner?
Yes.
Senator
Paskin? No. Any further amendments to be...
I'm sorry. Did I hear that right? The total vote, would you say that again?
2 yeas and 5 nays.
Thank you.
Yeas, carry.
Senator Wilkowski.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to offer amendment number 3, which would be E10.
I will object for purposes of discussion.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I just wanted to offer this because I wanted to get this on the record. And I think this is a pro-development amendment. This is, I think, I'm in alignment with Senator Wagner on the issue that the problem, one of the bigger problems that we have on the North Slope is the leasing structure. What this amendment does is it requires companies to submit, before submitting leases, to submit a minimum work plan. And this avoids the situation where companies go out, bid on tracts of land with no intention or no desire or no funding or no plan to actually ever go ahead and explore on that land. And recently, I think the thing that really sort of sparked this for me was we saw a recent a producer acquired 34 tracts of land on the North Slope. And the next week, it was reported in the Petroleum News that they didn't have any plan to develop them. They wanted to see what would happen with the ACES tax structure. And so, from my perspective, that's the wrong approach. You bid for a lease, and the tax structure is the tax structure. You have an obligation My opinion is when you bid on a lease in the state of Alaska, you have an obligation. You have a legal obligation to explore, and if you find oil, to develop that oil. And unfortunately, that's not the way our leases are being handled. The way they're being handled is as options to explore and options to develop. And we've learned through the short time that we had on this amendment that 25% of our leases, hundreds of leases, there's nothing going on with them. There's no permits. There's no permit applications. There's been no seismic studies. There's been no exploration. There's been no drilling. They're idle. There's no production, and there's no oil. And so I think as the sovereign, we can do a better job. And I think this amendment requires minimum work commitments. And it's very simple. It just says if you want to go ahead and acquire a lease in Alaska, you have to have some minimum standards. You have to at least have some sort of a plan to come in and not just simply use this as an option. The second thing it does is it requires a review of existing leases and plans of development. And the goal is to see whether the lessees are complying, the lessees are complying with their current plans of development, and whether the plans of development should be revised. The Constitution says we've got an obligation to get the maximum benefit for our resource. That's what this gets to. It ensures that our land is being developed, fully developed. It also requires that every 5 years, the Department of Revenue, Department of Natural Resources, performs an economic analysis on each participating area to determine whether the participating area is capable of increased production. And the third thing it does is ensure the terms of existing leases are being enforced. I think we do something similar to this. We get more oil in the pipeline. We get more exploration. We get more drilling. You get more oil. And it puts us in better alignment with industry. This is a pro-development amendment, Mr. Chairman. Now, I recognize it hasn't had much vetting, and it may need some more work. Senator, I filed a bill on this. Senator French is a co-sponsor. It's in this committee, Mr. Chairman, and I'm hopeful that we can get a hearing on this. And so with that, I'm going to withdraw this amendment, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to get that on the record because I think this is an important concept, and I do hope that at some time in the near future we will be able to take this up. So with that, I withdraw the amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Wilkowski. Any further amendments? Seeing none, no further amendments. Is there any additional discussion? I would have a motion to move the CS for Senate Bill 192, Version E, to the next committee or referral.
Mr. Co-Chair, I move that committee substitute for Senate Bill 192, Version E, be moved to the next committee referral with individual recommendations, attached fiscal notes, and forthcoming fiscal information.
Object.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to speak to the objection. There's an objection, and we should have a minute of debate. I don't know if Senator Wagner wants to speak, but I don't want to interrupt him.
No, go ahead. I guess.
Thank you.
I just want to vote.
Yeah, no, and that's fair. But I think we need to say, at least I feel compelled to say a few words as this bill leaves committee. It's going to be the last time that I see this bill until it comes back to the floor. I hope it does. I want to begin by congratulating you, Mr. Chairman. It's very difficult to move a bill like this through a committee. I've had that assignment once, and I know it was one of the most challenging tasks I was ever given during the legislature. I think you've done a very good job in balancing out the philosophical divisions we've seen here today, the scheduling issues that confront us as a legislature in the 90-day session, and so I think you deserve congratulations. You were extremely patient. We as a committee have done an enormous amount of research. We put hundreds of hours of time into this, both in the committee and in our offices, as Senator McGuire alluded to. We've all borne down on this as hard as we could. This bill makes a significant concession to the oil industry in terms of progressivity. It is a push of money across the table in the hundreds of millions of dollars. And while it has not met with much industry love, for lack of a better word, I think that's a negotiating posture. I think that's what the oil industry does. I will never forget having a oil industry executive from Exxon in my office during the time that we were talking about the AGEA pipeline. And I said to this person, it was Marty Massey. I've told the story before. He doesn't mind me telling him. I said, Marty, you're still asking for 30 years of tax stability. And he said, 35.
Okay, he wasn't going to give a single inch to me, even in my office, in a friendly conversation. So we're negotiating. The focus of this bill as it moves forward is going to be about new oil. Every single person in this room is completely united around the idea that we have to have more oil in the pipeline. There's not a single person in this room today who thinks we should not have more new oil in that pipeline. And I think in that idea, we can move forward. There are some things in this bill I wish were in it. I'll speak to SDFI. I think that SDFI is a major way for us to move forward into a new era of oil development in Alaska. Alaska can participate financially and make more investments happen if we put some of our money down. And that, it's a big idea. It'll take several years to grow. But with that, I just wanted to say goodbye to this bill. I hope I see it on the floor. And thank you for your leadership, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Wagner.
After thinking about it, I think before we vote, I do want to make one statement. And I've talked to a lot of people about an amendment I was going to offer this bill today. And the reason I decided not to offer that amendment is I'm not even comfortable with it because I haven't seen the modeling that goes along with the bill, and I haven't been able to look at what happens when that bill is put into place. So, therefore, I think it's incomplete without seeing the modeling. And hopefully the senator to my left has talked about working with the consultants and getting that modeling done, and I expect that to happen, and we'll see that in finance. So that's the reason I didn't offer my amendment on the tax holiday. I think the tax holiday is the way to go. I think it gets us partway along with the progressivity of where we need to be, and therefore that's why I decided to not offer the amendment at all today. My staff worked many days, many hours on the amendment and the a PowerPoint to present it, but without the modeling, I think it's just about halfway there. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Wagner. Any further comments by any committee member? The objection has been maintained. Madam Secretary, please call a roll call vote.
Senator McGuire?
No.
Senator Stevens?
Yes.
Senator Wilikowski?
Yes.
Senator French?
Yes.
Stedman?
Yes.
Senator Wagner?
No.
Senator Kasten?
Yes.
5 days and 2 nays.
Seeing that committee substitute for Senate Bill 192, version / E, is now moved from this committee to the next committee of referral, we need to sign the appropriate documents, so don't leave, but given that, Senate Resources for March 2nd, 2012 is adjourned.